And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have the president of the Delaware State Chamber of Commerce, Mike Quaranta. And Mike, thank you for coming in.
Laura, thanks for having me.
It's been a long time since you've been out, isn't it?
It has been. I have been doing Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting, and so it's great to actually be out of the office.
Well, it's refreshing to see you. So let's get started with today's show. We're going to be talking, obviously, about business in the state of Delaware. So do you want to start this thing off with tell us a little bit about the Delaware State Chamber of Commerce, founded in 1837. Give us a little bit of its history, what it does, and what is the overall mission?
Sure. It's the oldest business association of its kind in the state, and it's been around, as you point out, for, my goodness, since 1837, and we continue to grow and thrive. We really have, unlike a local chamber of commerce, where it's all about foot traffic for your local retail businesses and, you know, kind of connecting with local government and local communities, the state chamber, by contrast, is really about helping businesses, men and women, meet other business leaders, connecting them through networking, but also advocacy on behalf of the business community with our public policy leaders.
Delaware is known across the country. This is the state for business. It traditionally was the state for business. Is it still?
Absolutely. I mean, our Court of Chancery, our bar, the incorporation, all the businesses that are here to help with incorporations are second to none, and it is still an enormous part of Delaware's business fabric, and it's incredibly important to the state in terms of its resources and revenue. There's 57,000 licensed businesses, approximately, in the state of Delaware. But then there are literally hundreds and thousands and millions more that are incorporated in Delaware but operate someplace else.
How is Delaware for the individual business right now? Not those corporations that incorporate here and do business all over the world, but for a business that's setting up here, are the tax codes still in favor for them? Do they have an ear in the state house?
Sure. So, good question. The tax rates here are probably, we're in pretty good shape. I mean, we're kind of middle of the road when it comes to effective rates and the importance of that to businesses. But, you know, really, we've got some other challenges before us. And so, at the Chamber, it's been a focus of mine that we look regionally. How are we doing when we compare ourselves to Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey? How do we compare on important kind of benchmarks? Do we have the talent necessary for businesses that want to stay here, grow here, or maybe locate here? What does, you point out, the tax policy look like? What's labor policy? What are all the kind of indicators that businessmen and women look at when they want to stay, grow, and expand and bring on more employees? So those are all things we're very intentional about looking at, all those things. Site selectors who, you know, kind of rather humorously sometimes refer to themselves as site eliminators. Their job is to help reduce risk for businesses that want to locate someplace and choose what might be the best place for them. So we know what that formula looks like, and so we're intentional about trying to make ourselves as good as we possibly can in our region and in our state.
How do we look to someone who is thinking about relocating to the state? Are they finding what they need here? Because you alluded to talent pool.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. You know, we have a conference every October. It's called Developing Delaware. Our next rendition of that will be October 14th. 2 years ago, the focus was on permitting, and we invited in some site selectors to share with us how they saw us. And the governor moderated a panel with those site selectors. And to his credit, he looked right at them and said, "How are we doing?" And their response in summary was, "Not so good. You're not really part of the conversation." And he said, "Well, you know, let's talk more about that." "Well, why?" And we went through and we had a really, really great conversation, honest conversation about some of the factors that are important to the site selectors and important to businesses that might be looking to locate in the area. And one that stood out, at least at that conference, was permitting. It takes an awful lot of time from the time of application to an approval to get through all the paces for a business to get the permits they need that are necessary to go ahead and break ground or operate. And we can't be a small state and slow. That's just not a recipe for success. So we really, really have focused on this. We've called this Ready in Six. To the governor's credit, he's directed his agencies and departments to accelerate the time and shorten the steps that it takes to get those processes completed. We've made some progress. We have a lot more to do. But our surrounding jurisdictions, some of them have been able to, you know, the same regulatory approvals that might take 12 to 18 months here are done in 6 months there. So that's the standard we're trying to shoot for.
Well, that's regulatory there. But mm-hmm. what about, you alluded to permits and stuff, because, and of course, you're still competing with Philadelphia, which is notorious in slow-ups and roadblocks.
Right. Well, you know, again, we don't want to put public health or public safety at risk, but we can't be slow and small. We have to be nimble. There are other places that we're going to compete against to attract businesses to come here. Some of those states, because of their size, they have a much bigger pocketbook to write and provide subsidies to those businesses to attract them. You know, Delaware doesn't have that luxury. So what we've got is the ability to make nimble, quick, smart, and speedy decisions. And that's got to be our stock and trade. And if any of that starts to slow, we need to go back and refocus, and we need to kind of sharpen all those kind of pieces back up.
What about getting back to my question I started off with, the talent pool itself? I've had guests on who have talked about various problems that they've seen in getting training and getting people when the job is there.
Yeah, so the second rendition of the Developing Delaware Conference in October of 2019 was all about workforce development, because it is a fact that when you are a business and you want to grow and expand, or if you're looking to come here, you want to know, do you have the employees I'm going to need to hire? And don't tell me that it's going to be, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, you'll have them, you know, trained and ready for me to go. No, I want to know that they're ready the day I'm ready to open my doors. And so we've placed a heavy emphasis on upskilling the existing workforce. It's interesting. Only 2% of the workforce in the United States graduates from high school, a technical school of some kind of certificate program or the like, a two-year college or a four-year college every single year. So 80% of what the business community needs annually is upskilled workers that are retrained or upskilled, as I said, from the existing workforce. And that's got to be a heavy, heavy emphasis. The states that are the winners in the future will be expert at constantly upskilling their workforce. So I was heartened, when the governor signed an executive order a couple weeks ago, dedicating $10 million from the CARES Act, money that the state got from the federal government, and he's dedicating that toward workforce training and upskilling. And that's enormously important. We have huge deficits in the building trades, in information technology, and in healthcare in particular. Those are three in-demand employment verticals that we know we are just lacking in. And let me explain a comment or two about each if I could. So in the building trades, you know, I'm 60 years old. When I was ready to enter and then leave high school, you know, it was drilled into my generation, go to college, go to college, go to college. You know, that was a ticket to success. If you went to a good school, you got a good job. You went to a great school, you got a great job. Well, you know, so everybody's replicated that, and what we've done is we've accumulated $1.4 trillion of student loan debt in the process, and now we have 32% of the adult population over 25 with a four-year degree. Back when I was 25, there was only about 13% of the adult population with a four-year degree. At the same time, all these businesses with computer technology and the internet, et cetera, have all figured out how to become more efficient. The companies are slimmer, they're smaller, especially in the C-suite. So, but we did that, and all of that was at the expense of building trades, you know, and it's really too bad. So today we're really paying for it. It's very difficult to find a carpenter, an electrician, a plumber, someone who does HVAC, someone that does welding. And these are great opportunities for people with certificate programs to enter the workplace with a reasonable starting wage. I have members that have welders, for example, after 4 or 5 years of work and training, they're making six figures, and they don't have the student loan debt that was associated with a four-year degree. Similarly, in information technology, the last few months, Laura, have brought to sharper focus for all of us as online shopping was about 32% for most retailers before the pandemic. Today, it's almost exclusively online. Not in total, but it's certainly grown exponentially. And so IT is really important to make all those platforms and all those payment systems work. Similarly, we have people who are going to school online part-time, or we have people who are fixing our devices because we're all having Zoom meetings and doing things remotely. So IT, and it's as important on the manufacturing floor or in the hospitals as it is in our banks for fintech. It's everywhere, and it's for large and small businesses. And in fact, all these things, whether it's workforce retraining, and whether it's the trades or whether it's IT, that helps businesses of every size. Finally, healthcare and healthcare employees. Some of these skills, some of the certificate programs don't have as high a starting wage, but they're stackable credentials and you can work your way up. And we know this, as a society, we're an older population. Delaware, in 2010, was the ninth oldest state in the union. We'll see what the statistics say when the 2020 census is complete. We know that, you know, there are people that are moving in particular to Sussex County, Delaware, because of its favorable taxes and beautiful location. And similarly, people are also moving to Kent and Newcastle counties as well, but they're really going to Sussex. And so as we gray as a population, we become a retirement destination. We're going to need more healthcare workers. People use more healthcare in their sixth, seventh, and eighth decades of life. So those are three industries that are in desperate need of more people, and we're going to upskill all of that.
Well, we're of a like age, and when I was in high school, they did have vocational school. And as I mentioned before, I do a lot of these shows, 22 years worth, and I've had educators in here who said, think about back in the 30s and before, you looked at 100 kids in the class, and you'd think, well, 30% of them are going to go into agriculture. And these are going to have a percentage that's going to go in and learn a trade. And we need those trades still, and yet we don't teach it anymore.
We don't. We just have to pivot, and we've got to be more nimble, because this is what's changed. There are disruptions that occur because of technology, artificial intelligence, and innovation. All of that is happening now more frequently. And not only does it happen more frequently, the changes are much, much more dramatic. And sometimes issues that are completely unseen, like a pandemic, usher in change in an accelerated kind of way. I'll give you an example. There's a lot of businesses that have had to pivot and really rethink their model the number of workers that are going to work remotely, perhaps, in the future. Now, that's a luxury, and not everybody has that opportunity. But there's also some collateral changes that will happen as a result, too. About one-third of the child care providers in this country, nationwide, are not going to return to operation. So we have a lot of families where people do work outside the house, and they can't work remotely. And there's going to be some challenges, but from the challenges of all those businesses exiting the child care industry, there will be new opportunities that will present themselves.
That is true. But, we have a problem, too, that we have not put value on somebody who says, I want to go into mechanical engineering. I want to go into mechanics. I want to go into carpentry, or paying a living wage to someone who says, I do want to go into child care.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, one of the reasons we got so focused on the whole issue of upskilling and workforce development was, one, there were substantial vacancies within different industries, like the trades, like healthcare, and like IT. There has been a push to raise the minimum wage, to make it a living wage. There's a real problem with that. And it's not because the business people are a bunch of cold-hearted, you know, people that don't care about their employees. No, their success is all, you know, integrated. The real challenge is this, Laura. If every time we push up the minimum wage, we make business people make a decision about man versus machine. And all it does is the easiest things to automate are the lowest skilled jobs.
The and ones those, making the minimum wage.
Absolutely.
Catch 22.
And so all we're doing is accelerating the time with which those people are put out of work. And if they don't then have a marketable skill, all we're doing is pushing them out the door a lot faster than would otherwise happen. So we push back, and in fairness, though, you know, it was incumbent upon us to have a better idea. And the better idea is to put our money where our mouth is, and that is to push policy leaders to use our precious resources and put money into upskilling and workforce development into in-demand work industries or things like IT, healthcare, and the building trades, where those are sustainable positions for a very long period of time. They have wages where sky's the limit if you're good and you work hard, and they have a future, and that's different than being a greeter, or that's different than working in some other kind of low-skill jobs. People that don't have marketable skills are going to get left further and further behind for a longer period of time. They're going to go from underemployed to completely unemployable for a very long time if we don't put our eyes on them and help them succeed.
Well, what kind of businesses are looking at Delaware? If you say that we're becoming a retirement state, are we looking at a future where we have foreign corporations with their U.S. offices and a post office box here, and everything else is meds and eds?
No, I mean, so one of the greatest opportunities for the state is going to be all the activity that is being ushered in by Gulftainer and the folks at the Port of Wilmington. They have plans. The Port of Wilmington right now ranks 19th in terms of port traffic in the United States. And it's the management's plan that before the end of this decade, they will be a top 10 U.S. port in terms of its traffic. That means there's going to be an awful lot of warehousing, logistics, transportation, an awful lot of goods coming in and out, and there's going to be great opportunities for people to be part of that expansion. And those are going to be, you know, jobs at different skill levels in several different professional capacities.
That sounds like a military retiree. just saying, it sounds like, but yet we don't attract the military retirees, do we, because of our taxation?
Well, no, we do. Actually, we do. We get a number of people who've been stationed at Dover Air Force Base, and they end up back in Kent County, or they do end up in Newcastle or Sussex County, because they had such a great experience when they lived in and around the base. Actually, our taxation is quite low. I mean, the first $25,000 of income in retirement in Delaware is tax-free. You have no sales tax. And in Sussex, for example, you have some of the lowest property taxes on the entire eastern seaboard of the United States for property taxes. So Delaware is very, very affordable, and that's why people from the D.C. metro area, Baltimore, Philadelphia, New Jersey, and New York and beyond actually put their eyes on Rehoboth, Bethany, Dewey, Lewis, and those places, and they find it as a really, really great destination because they can also get back out easily to see friends and family from whence they came.
I do believe, though, isn't a military pension, it's taxable in Delaware, but not in surrounding states.
Well, you got me there. I don't know that one.
I may be wrong, so we'll just pretend I didn't even bring that up. But just you did make a great point for why people would want to relocate here. But you just mentioned the roads. How's our transportation system within the state?
Transportation system is good and getting better. I think that we just watched Secretary Jennifer Cohen, who had been at the Department of Transportation, announce her retirement. Jen was a terrific contributor during her time in running the Department of Transportation, and before that, the Department of Motor Vehicles. There's a whole other industry and a whole other world that's changing before our very eyes. As we have a transition to electric vehicles and then autonomous vehicles, and how we get around as people and what that means to our urban environments where people perhaps, you know, you know, use less parking and have more subscription-based vehicle services. It's going to change everything. How we move goods from the port or from our agricultural establishments to market, all of that's going to change rather dramatically. There's 3.5 million independent truckers in the United States. What's interesting is if you move to autonomous vehicles, as largely as expected, by about 2025 or 2026, you're going to have to pivot those people to maybe more of a stevedore kind of responsibility of moving things on and off the truck as opposed to actually operating the truck. So all of this is going to change. Again, this is the confluence of technology, artificial intelligence. All of this is coming very rapidly. Again, we need people with skills that can manage all this, that can operate these things, can oversee them. We just got a lot of change coming, Laura, and it's coming quite rapidly.
Hey, we are well past the halfway point. If you're just joining us, this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis. With me today, we have the president of the Delaware State Chamber of Commerce, Mike Quaranta. If you would like more information, go to their website, dscc.com. DSCC.com for the Delaware State Chamber of Commerce. And we are so running out of time, but let's get back to the discussion about highways, and let's do the information highway and broadband and technology in this state. Do we have enough? Do we have enough digital to go around? And are we going to be falling behind, especially in this COVID time, where children are learning and even our students at higher education are having to learn this way?
Actually, that's a great question. We're actually got a plan to solve some of the broadband and some of the technology deserts that have been in Delaware, specifically in our rural areas of Kent County and Sussex County. And there's a few pockets of this in our urban areas in Newcastle County, too. But I think it's safe to say that within another year, most of that will have been kind of solved. There's been a huge investment by both the state government and the private industry to go ahead and make those deserts go away and put in the infrastructure that's necessary. But technology is absolutely critical, Laura. And, you know, one of the things that we're focusing on at the Chamber is the importance of data. And actually, our October 14th conference, this year's version of Developing Delaware, is going to be about data in Delaware. And it's kind of like what we know, what we don't know, and why it matters to Delaware business. You know, so different data points create information. Information creates knowledge, and from that knowledge comes actionable insights. And those are the kinds of things that we're going to talk about at that conference. You know, for example, we know that we're going to be close to about 1 million people when the census gets delivered. We also know that, you know, within the last 10 years, tens of thousands of people have moved to Delaware from someplace else. But how much do we know about those folks? How much do we know about the surrounding states and their markets? So we need more information. It's there. Are we getting our hands on it? And then what are we doing about it?
Mm-hmm.
And that'll help businesses of all sizes, large and small.
Okay. Well, how, in our remaining minutes, how has COVID affected Delaware? Are we harder hit? How are we doing?
I think we're, so that's kind of a, it's kind of a mixed bag of results. I mean, the good news is we have never really idled our construction industry. And that's great because we've been able to knock out construction projects, road projects, and things that otherwise would have been idled, and they have been idled in surrounding states. Unfortunately for us, the hospitality industry has been very hard hit, restaurants, hotels, and the like. And it's hurtful to see. Also small specialty retail and people that were seasonal that really, really depended upon, you know, high rates of visitorship in order to succeed because they might make a substantial percentage of their income over a short period of time. The hopeful news is this. You know, we've had more people return to restaurants, more people go back to work, go back to shopping. And in the construction industry and in other kinds of businesses where things were deemed important and critical and essential, we've not seen widespread virus spread. And there's a story there that needs to be told. You know, their customers, if they're consumer-facing businesses, or their employees themselves, It's a testament to the fact that the businesses and the business leaders have been able to pivot, create a safer work environment than they maybe had before, to our public policy leaders that have said, hey, put on a mask, keep some distance between you and somebody else, wash your hands, do all the things we've heard repeatedly. Believe it or not, all that's kind of worked, because if you look at the evidence from the last 5.5 months, a lot of businesses have put more people back into places of employment. Some of us are more active consumers now than we have been back in March. And, you know, so far, the numbers speak for themselves. It's pretty good results.
How do we interact with the chamber? How does the public, the non-business, interact with you? Or what can we do for you, or vice versa?
Well, a lot of us are employees of employers that are members of the chamber, and that's a key way. We've got about 1,000 members across the state, and if the companies are a member of the state chamber of commerce, or if they're members of a local chamber of commerce, you know, employees or through their employer can become involved. We have different policy committees. We have different events that we sponsor, leadership events, training events, a whole range of very, what I think are, you know, fascinating and really, really great topics that we tease out and kind of try to dig through. So there's an abundant way of which people can be involved. But for most people who are part of the general public, it's really through your employer, because we're an employer-based operation.
Okay. Parting words. What's on the agenda? What were the goals, and what are the goals?
So a continued focus on workforce development, because that's going to become, it's not just it's kind of a one-time thing. It's going to be something we're going to have to work on forever, because change is coming rather dramatically and repeatedly, and more frequent than it ever has before. And so that's going to require all of us to be nimble, smart, and staying current and ahead of some of these trends and curves in the business community. And that has implications for all of us as employees. We also want to celebrate our small businesses. You know, 80% of the population works for a small business, and that's by definition a business with 50 or fewer employees. In November, we'll celebrate our Superstars in Business Awards program again. We'll do it virtually this year, but it's a terrific way that the state recognizes some businesses that have just done incredible things, and by definition, you know, they're smaller businesses. They're not, you know, publicly traded companies, and you know, we're excited about that and excited about our future.
Okay, and we find out when we go to your website, what do we find?
A whole range of information, some business news, member news, how to get connected on different topics, some of the issues that we're advocating for. And we keep it pretty fresh and pretty current.
Okay, and that website, of course, is real easy. For the Delaware State Chamber of Commerce, you go to dscc.com. dscc.com for the Delaware State Chamber of Commerce. My guest today, it's President Mike Quaranta. And Mike, thank you for coming in.
Laura, thanks for having me.
It's great seeing you.
Likewise.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.